When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
As a plant-based cheese company, Daiya has never talked about beef in an ad before, because someone somewhere once had a beef with saying beef and plant-based together. So putting a slice of Daiya cheese on a beef burger, not okay. Well, our delicious melty cheese has a beef with your beef about beef, because any step towards plant-forward eating is a step in the right direction. Daiya, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. Now made with Daiya Oat Cream Blend.
His first in English football, and it's given Tottenham a very comfortable lead going into half-time. Zamora's lost down here. Referee looks at his watch as he races forward. It's Jermaine Defoe, and he's got Lennon up with him, and only Konchesky to beat at the moment. Defoe! Oh, no! Unbelievably, it has been pushed out to Spalding.
Towards Lennon, Thatcher beats him in the air, but it falls to Mido here, who took it well on his chest. Keane, Robbie Keane, oh, and again James is denied, but Scalteri coming forward from the back gives Spurs the lead 2 minutes before half-time. The goal from an improbable source after David James had made that great save from Keane.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs. Hope you are keeping safe. Hope you are keeping well. Delighted to have back alongside me John from Lily White Rose. John, how are you?
Hey, Ricky. Yeah, doing really well, thank you. And yeah, I'm really excited for tonight's pod. We've got another excellent former Spurs player, and I'm sure our listeners are really looking forward to hearing who it is and hearing from him tonight.
So we're delighted to welcome a player that is very, very well known, of course, for that late winner against West Ham. We've got the brilliant Paul Stalteri on The Last Word on Spurs. Paul, how are you?
I'm well, guys. How is everything going?
Yeah, we're okay. It's been a bit of a crazy time, John, hasn't it, in this last couple of months?
Yeah, you know, absolute madness. I mean, similar to over here in North America, in Toronto and Canada, very similar to where, you know, you guys have faced similar kind of challenges and that the UK has faced, England's faced, the rest of the world has really faced. Yeah, something like everyone has probably said, something we never thought we'd see in our time. But yeah, very, very strange. And, you know, we're slowly starting to get out of things here in Canada. And hopefully that's a good sign. Good sign to see some football being played over the weekend in the Bundesliga. That's something to keep an eye on as well, I'm assuming, for all of the English fans in the Premiership as well, because if that league is continuously going and there's no hiccups and no problems, I think that's a good sign, not just for the Premiership, but for the rest of the leagues all across Europe that are ready almost and trying to get their leagues going again before and getting a proper conclusion, to say the least, as opposed to cancelling or ending the season as some of these have forced to have to be done.
Bigger leagues, I always thought, would come back, mainly owing to the money in the game.
Well, we're going to forget all that for the next hour and a bit, because, Paul, we're going to talk about your journey and what a fabulous career you have had. I know we joked off air that you felt it was more of a steady career, but there's been some really amazing feats in it. So we're really pleased to have you on the show and, of course, discuss your time at Spurs. But let's go back to the very, very start. You was born to an Italian father and a Guyanese mother. and considered physical education to be your favourite subject from a very early age. You also mentioned that for you, your favourite player growing up was Paolo Maldini. Therefore, is it always going to be the case, Paul, that you was going to be a defender if you made it professionally?
You know, growing up, like most players, you want to score goals. You want to, young players don't say you want to be, you know, want to play at the back. I don't have too many kids when I'm coaching nowadays say I want to go at the back when they're 8 or 9 years old or 10 years old. And I was no different. I wanted to score goals. And, you know, I actually started most of my career up until my early 20s playing more of an attacking role. And then, slowly, when I got to Germany, that kind of transitioned into a role of all over the pitch kind of thing, where I was almost a bit of a utility, where I could play in pretty much any position on every given weekend. It was one season there in Bremen where I think I played every position on the pitch. So that was the case, and then it kind of got more into the fullback role. Probably mid-20s, and later on in my career, that's how I probably finished out the greater part of my career. But early on, it was definitely it was more of an attacking role, and then it kind of went into an all-around role, and then it went into more of a strictly fullback role.
Paul, I understand that your first live football match you went to see was the Toronto Blizzards, a soccer club based in Toronto in Canada that actually played in the North American Soccer League. What was that like for you, and how would you describe the caliber of that league?
Yeah, it was. It's strange. It's something similar to what's going on now in Canada with the new Canadian Premier League that's just started up. We were slowly entering into our second season here until we came into this the pandemic arrived and kind of brought all the preseason to a halt. So we were about to enter into our second season, and last season was very reminiscent of that time in the CSL in the Canadian Soccer League when the Blizzard played in that league with teams across the country, and we had some fond memories of going down and watching the games there. And it's very similar to the feeling, you know, bringing my son down to some of the games last season here in Toronto and in just outside of Toronto where York Nine, where the club I'm helping out this season, where they play. And it's a, you know, kind of a similar feeling because it's the Canadian league with with all the Canadian teams across the country. And the level then was quite decent. A lot of Canadian players played in that league. A lot of Canadian players who played in the World Cup back in '86 played in that league. So it was quite successful. The level of play last season and leading into this season has been relatively a positive surprise, better than and at a higher level than I think a lot of people would have imagined and thought, so which is a good thing. And like I said, it reminds me a lot when I was young, bringing my son there, and when my father brought me there to watch something at a similar level.
Now, Paul, while playing youth soccer in Ontario with the Moulton Bullets, you won a Robbie International Soccer Tournament Championship. And in 1996, you then began your soccer career, playing 1 year of college soccer at Clemson University in 1996, where you played as a defender on either side of the flank, as well as midfield. Tell us what that level was like, Paul, and did you know that would eventually lead to a professional move for you?
To be honest, at the time, it was more or less what the pathway for a lot of the players was, is to maybe go down to the US. MLS was just starting to get going at that time. That was an option. Maybe you'd play play 4 years, graduate from the university, maybe get drafted into the MLS. Or if you're real ambitious, your thoughts were in Europe. My thoughts were still at the time in Europe, but it was very, very difficult to get there. So it was, we're down in the States. It was more of a 4 year plan to go down and get a university degree and see what happened after that. But things change all the time in sports, especially when you want to become a professional. And it was one of those situations where after one season, I had another option to leave and become a professional playing my home city here. So those things kind of change. But the plan was to go there for 4 years and see what happened after that, whether that was going to be MLS or maybe even hopefully Europe. But I realized quickly that, there was another opportunity for me to leave, and I took that.
That was obviously when you elected to turn professional, signing a contract with the Toronto Lynx whilst attending York University. Now, after playing one season with the Lynx alongside fellow Canadian national teammate Dwayne Di Rosario, where he led the team in scoring with 8 goals and 2 assists, you were quickly noticed by a scout from Werder Bremen and then purchased by the club. Talk us through what that was like and how quickly that move escalated, you know, Bremen's interest, and sort of what were you thinking moving to Germany at the time?
It came real quick that season, because I just finished, like you said, I just left Clemson to join up with the Toronto Lynx, a newly formed professional club in the North American A-League, a league, say, just under the MLS, the second tier to MLS at that time. So I played the summer months through the season. I had finished the entire season with them. We were quite successful. We got to the playoffs. We had a good, good campaign for our opening season, which was quite successful, both on and off the pitch. And then I was enrolled as well in York University. I was enrolled in school. So I was there for about six or 7 weeks. And an opportunity came for me to Germany into a club called Werder Bremen, which was, you know, the Bundesliga at that time didn't have the coverage, not near the coverage that it has now. Or within the last 10, 15 years, where it's gotten much more coverage. At that time, when I was growing up, the biggest covered leagues were the Premiership and the Serie A here in Toronto, in Canada. So that was, that was the case. But it was an opportunity to go over there, and they invited me there for a trial that obviously I was never going to say no to. And things happened very, very quickly after, 9 or 10 days at the club. I was offered a contract, and things kind of went from there. So it was I was real fortunate. It was a time that I was, football for me was the first time I kind of shut down for a little while, because I'd been go for a good solid 2 years where I hadn't had a break as a young player. So I was on a little bit of a break, to be honest. And then this kind of came about, and it went real, real fast after that.
After 2.5 seasons in the reserves, you made your debut with the club in August 2000, scoring the first game of the season. And you were playing against Canadian teammate Kevin McKenna, both were the first Canadians ever to see action in the top German league. Tell us what that was like for you. And was there ever a concern in your mind that you was never going to make it, given how long you had to wait for your debut? And how much did it help you scoring on your first appearance for the club?
Yeah, a couple of things there. I mean, you look back at the time, and it was about two and a half seasons where you're getting real frustrated, because, when you first got in there, you thought, you're thinking you could jump right in and help out and play and compete, because you're doing that on an everyday basis. It was the time when you're training every day with the first team players. You're kind of part of the squad, but you're not playing in games. You're playing most of your games in the second team and then in the reserves. But the reserve league in Germany is much different than in the UK. It's a league where the teams compete in either the third or fourth division. It depends on where your club is at that time. So in Bremen, we competed in the third tier of German football, which was quite high. So it was quite competitive. You're playing against former players. You're playing against former Bundesliga players. You're playing against players who are vying to get into the Bundesliga, clubs trying to get into the second Bundesliga at the time. So it was quite competitive league, which was good to have those games as opposed to just a kind of a Monday or Tuesday reserve game, which is a little bit of a difference than in the UK. But yeah, during those times, you're thinking you're ready to go. But I think the best thing for me at that time was to learn the trade and fight those couple of seasons and get myself really understanding the European game, really understanding the German game, the German football, going to the stadium every week or every other week, watching from the stands and really getting to learn the league, which was, I think, the best thing for me. If you got thrown right into it, I'm not sure I would have been as successful as really learning the trade that took me. During that time, I was really close a few times. There was about 4 or 5 times where I was on the bench, actually even real close to getting subbed into a couple of those games. But things just sometimes didn't work out, and it wasn't my time. But when I finally was able to make that make my debut, it was quite good, because it came to that whole entire preseason with the first team. I had played a lot of the preseason friendly matches. I was having a real good time. I was at a good period in my career at the time at the club, showing well in training and games. And, at that time, you're proving yourself not just in friendly matches, you're proving yourself in every single training session, trying to get not just on the game sheet, you're trying to get into the squad first, and then you're trying to get on the pitch. So that's where I was at that time. And, it was kind of building up to that first Bundesliga game of the year where, it was highly anticipated, obviously, after the break. And I think Kevin, who was a real good friend of mine, still a real good mate of mine, one of my best mates, you know, he's in a similar situation out in Cutbus with his club. And it was kind of a coincidence that we were both playing, you know, we're playing against each other. And it ended up that he was playing as well, making his debut. I was making my debut. Like I said, I was playing more of an attacking role at that time when I first got there. Kevin was at the back, and, you know, till this day, I can still give him the gears that I got the best of him on our debut. So that's something, it was real special, and it was a special moment to share with one of my best mates in the game.
During the 2001-2002 season, you then went on to establish your role in the first team at Bremen and went on to cement your role as a regular in the 2002-03 season. Bremen were crowned Bundesliga champions and German Cup winners in 2003-04. I mean, just for some of our fans who maybe don't know Bremen's history and the size of the club too well, can you just let us know sort of how much of a big achievement that actually was? And I mean, to win the double, both the league title and the cup, in that history-making season just makes the feat seem even more impressive. Can you just tell us what that was like and just sort of the history of Bremen, as I said?
It's well-established. I mean, it's inside of German football, one of the more successful clubs. It's got a star on its badge. You know, we were the last team to win the Bundesliga. We were the ones that got the star back onto the badge, got onto the badge. So those aren't easy to come by in Germany. And when you have that on your badge, you know that the club has got some success and had some success. So that's very special and very proud from what we were able to achieve for the club. I mean, the club is a, you know, like I said, in the 90s, it was a club under Otto Rehhagel who had managed the club for a number of years. He went on to win the European Championship with Greece. You know, he was, they called him the king of Bremen, the König at that time. They were the biggest rivals of Bayern Munich at the time. So Bremen has a huge history of being successful. Then they kind of went into a lull there where when Otto had left, he went and actually joined Bayern. I was manager there, and you know, the club kind of went, you know, changed managers a number of times, a number of seasons, and didn't really, you know, get back going until Thomas Schaaf took over the club, and you know, he ended up taking over for about 13 odd seasons as well. So, and now they're kind of back to the same thing where they're struggling again since he had left. So, but the club in general is real successful. It's one of the bigger clubs in German football. They've had big success over the years. They never managed to win the double until that season. So it's something that was very, very special for us to not only win the Bundesliga, but we were able to win the cup a couple of weeks after that and be the first team in the history of the club to win the double. So, it's like I said, it's a club struggling really at the moment right now, unfortunately. If you look at the table, we're really struggling, but it's a club that's got a big, big history in German football. I think they've only been down once ever in the history of the competition. And hopefully this season's not the second time, but it's, you know, we're fingers crossed that they can turn it around and get themselves back to where they were for a number of years. And that was playing Champions League football for a lot of years there.
Just one more on that. I understand at the time you were the only Canadian international to ever win the Bundesliga title. Is a certain young Alfonso Davies now challenging you for that role?
No doubt. Alfonso's in a fantastic club. He's, you know, one of the biggest ones, biggest clubs in the world. Last year, obviously, they won the championship. He got there in January, but you know, he played limited minutes, so it's a different situation than he is in this year. I think this year, if they do manage to win the title, you know, fantastic for him, and it'll be one of those where he knows that this year he's really played a huge role and a major role in winning that title. Sometimes when you get there in the middle of the season and you only play a handful of games, it's a little bit of a different feeling, if you understand what I mean, as opposed to playing every week in and week out like he's doing now. And they're at the top of the table. He's had a fantastic season. I actually, you know, coached Alfonso in our youth teams and with the Canadian and even with the Canadian team and even in our senior team. So he's a player I know really, really well. And, you know, really, really pleased to see him, you know, hit the real ground running this season with Bayern.
Paul, whilst having that domestic success and that brilliant achievements with Werder Bremen, you also on the international stage doing some fantastic things with Canada. You was a regular for the Canadian national team. You made a national record of 84 appearances at the senior level, scoring 7 goals. You was also part of the squad that won the Gold Cup in 2000. You was named most capped Canadian of all time until the record was surpassed by Julian de Guzman in 2015. You was named the team captain for a friendly on the 1st of June 2007 against Venezuela, and you remained the captain for the international fixtures for the rest of the entirety of the 2007 Gold Cup. Tell us, what do you make of your achievements that you had, if we're being honest with you, because it was incredible for you on the international stage. In fact, you were also inducted into the Canadian Soccer Hall of Fame in 2017. I mean, when I asked you to sum that all up, is that the proudest moments of your footballing career on the international stage?
If I look back on it, winning the Gold Cup was something real, real special at that time, especially being so young. And that was really the first major trophy Canada had won. So that was something fantastic, a huge achievement for us. The first major trophy that I was able to win. We were successful in youth teams. We'd gotten to two World Cups, U17, U20 World Cups. So we had, our fair success playing with the national teams in the youth, which is not always the norm in Canada, but we were quite successful that generation. And then we got into that Gold Cup and went on a fantastic run, and we were able to win that tournament, which was something real, real special for us. Then we played a number of Gold Cups after that. The World Cup qualifying, capping your country is something real, real special. I was able to do that for a number of years, and that's something really, really special for any player to be able to captain their country. And now, you'll never forget that. Being able to at one point surpass the record of caps at 84 was something that I'll never forget as well. And there was also, I think there was a stat at the time when they told me it was 84 games, but it was 83 consecutive starts, which was something I think it's not I'm not big on numbers, I'm not big on records, I'm not kind of I never really looked at numbers too often, but when I thought back of 83 consecutive starts, that's something real, real special to see that it was not just 84 games, it was 83 consecutive games where you're picked in the first 11, which is something real, real memorable as well.
Well, moving on from your international success and now to your big move to Tottenham that came around in May 2005, Tottenham had announced they'd agreed a deal to sign you. However, you had announced before the Spurs move that you'd be leaving Bremen at the end of that season with your contract expiring. You'd been repeatedly linked with a move to the Premier League and reportedly turned down a switch to Crystal Palace the summer before. Both Manchester City and Charlton Athletic were also mooted as admirers of you, but Spurs won the chase for your signature. How early on did you hear of Spurs' interest, and what made you feel this was the right time to come to the Premier League and join Tottenham?
At that moment, I'd spent 7.5 seasons in Germany and at Bremen, and it was like you said, my contract was coming to an end that year, and it was there was an opportunity to extend in Bremen. I didn't really ever want to leave Bremen and join another Bundesliga club. That was something that I kind of made a decision in my mind from the get-go that I didn't want to do. If I was going to stay in Germany, I was going to stay in Bremen, and most likely, the age that I was at, it was either the perfect opportunity to move somewhere and experience something different, and or stay in Bremen. And if I done that, it would have been maybe finishing my career there if I was lucky enough and fortunate enough at the time. But so I'd always wanted to play in the Premiership. Like I'd said, growing up, English football, Italian football was more seen here in North America, especially in Canada. So it was a dream of mine to go there one day. And it was, like I said, there was with my contract running out, there were some opportunities there. There was a few clubs that were in touch in England, a few other countries as well. But Tottenham got real serious, in the new year there. I'd say, if I look back just before I'd signed, I know that they were following me for a number of games in the Champions League at the time. And in the Bundesliga, and it got kind of serious in the just after the winter into the March, April there, and where we sat down with them and we were able to have good conversations with Martin Jol. Frank Arnesen at the time was the sport director who was in charge and really led the charge for me to get there, because you know he was doing a lot of work with the contracts and obviously signing the players. So he was a big factor of me going and joining there and meeting Martin and speaking to him as well was really kind of made that decision. It was the best place for me to go. The club that really wanted me the most, the club that I got the feeling that really wanted me the most, and that's kind of what you make your decision based on, and that's what I wanted to make my decision based on. It wasn't based on, let's say, financial or this or that. It was just more or less what feeling you got from the club wanting you the most and where you thought you would fit in the most. And Tottenham was in a situation where they were building a real strong club. They had some real good young players there. I think Frank Arneson signed a number of players at that time, and the club was really on the up. So it was a great opportunity to join, and so that's why I decided on Tottenham.
You said Arneson was very much, you know, integral to bringing you to Tottenham. At the time, he was overjoyed that you signed for Spurs ahead of some really stiff competition. He said, "I'm delighted that we can announce our next signing for the new season. Paul Stalteri is a defender who can play in midfield, so he's a multifunctional player who can play on both sides. He's just come from a tough environment in Werder Bremen, and their players are very well known for their mentality." So, you've mentioned about Frank Arneson. Tell us, was Daniel Levy at all involved in any of the kind of negotiations? Was it all directly kind of handled by Frank Arneson at the time? And obviously, of course, you met Martin on the way.
More or less with Frank at that time. That was his job. That was, you know, he was the sport director. And he was in charge of building the squad and building the team alongside Martin. You know, I met Daniel as well. But it wasn't most of the contact was through Frank and getting those details done. It was all most of the negotiations done with myself, my agent, and Frank.
Spurs at that time, as you alluded to, had some really great young players, and that summer they'd already struck deals for yourself, Timo Tainio, who was joining from Auxerre on a free transfer, Tom Huddleston, who joined from Derby County. As Martin Jol looked to take the side into Europe, did you feel at the time, after meeting Martin and seeing the players in the squad, that was possible? And how did you rate Martin as a manager?
I touched on there is that they had a number of players and they were building a real good squad. I thought they had some real good attackers: Robbie Keane, Jermaine Defoe. There was some, you know, the team was solid at the back: Michael Dawson, Ledley King. So there was a base there, Michael Carrick in midfield. There was Tom Huddleston joining in as well. There was, you know, the real spine of the team was strong. Martin, meeting him, you could see that his passion for the game and he wanted to win more than anything. That was one indication I think I got from early on. You know, he just wanted to win games. He just wanted to be successful. And, but he wanted to play football, and he knew the German game quite a bit. He knew me as a player a lot, so it was I was comfortable with him from the moment that I kind of met him. And I thought at that time the squad was being built, like I said, and there was a number of high profile, high level quality players in the team, and it was just a matter of maybe getting that consistency going, and we were able to do that. And Martin was able to do that, and he was a big factor in the success of the football club.
We are going to go for a very quick break, and when we return, we're going to be discussing Paul's debut for Spurs. We're going to be discussing that fantastic long-range goal against Leicester City. He also scored, of course, against Man City as well, and what it was like playing in the North London Derby, and of course, Lasagna Gate, scoring against West Ham, that very, very famous goal that Paul is ultimately renowned for, and of course, the rest of Paul's career. So do not go anywhere. We are back after this very, very short break.
Paul, one question I must ask you about was your choice of shirt number at Tottenham, because obviously historically in English football we have number 2 for the right back and number 3 for the left back, but you were actually number 7. Was that something the club asked you to do, or did you just fancy choosing that number?
Yeah, I think it was more of a coincidence at the time. I grew up playing with number 7 my entire youth career, and also my entire career with the national team. I had worn number 7, like I said earlier, in my career. I was playing more of an attacking player. I was able to have that number in Bremen for a number of seasons, and it was just more of a comfort level. And it was a number 3. It was available at the club at the time. I don't even think 2 was available at the time. So it was more of a coincidence than anything. But, I'm kind of more of a traditionalist as well. When I look back, and when I'm doing my when I'm a coach now and manager now, my fullbacks are definitely wearing 2 and 3 as well. But it was more or less a comfort level and something that was available, so I had taken it. But of course, I understand the traditionalists in England didn't probably take to that as they would see their fullbacks wearing 2 and 3 and their wingers more 7 and 11. So, and I understand that completely.
On the 13th of August 2005, you made your Tottenham Hotspur debut against Portsmouth in a 2-0 away win at Fratton Park, which was never really an easy place to go. The goals came through an Andy Griffin own goal and a superb effort from Jermaine Defoe. Spurs on the day were without the injured Edgar Davids, Robbie Keane and Nedley King, and we gave debuts to, alongside you, Wayne Routledge and Timu Taineo. What were your memories of that day, and especially, of course, pulling on that jersey for the first time?
It was fantastic. I mean, it was a tough battle for me in preseason because of my last game. I'd never been really injured in my career in Bremen. I had never really suffered any long term injuries. Missed the odd game here and there, but not nothing really long term. And then my last game in Kaiserslautern in the Bundesliga, I tore my total ligaments in my ankle. So it was a real unfortunate end to my career there in Bremen, but. You know, something that, you know, I thought maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks max kind of turned into 2, 3 months. It was almost 3 months before I was able to get going again. So between the last game of the season with Bremen and just maybe joining up with a squad probably 2 weeks before the Premiership began, I think I managed to play in the preseason, the last preseason game at White Hart Lane in the last friendly of the year, which was... But I just started training, so I'd missed most of the preseason. I'd missed the trip out to Asia. So I'd missed a big chunk. So it was a difficult preseason for me. It was tough to get going, but my goal was to get ready and fit for that first league match away to Portsmouth, which fortunately for me worked out. I've just barely made it. I was, probably wasn't even 100% at the time, but fortunately I was able to get fit enough and be selected for that game. And again, came away with 3 points. Wayne made his debut. He played right in front of me on that day as well. Tamer was in midfield, a good friend of mine as well. So it was a real special time for myself. I remember my wife traveled down to the game with Tamer's wife. So it was a good moment for us.
Now onto a moment that maybe wasn't such a good moment was the 8th of January 2006, where Mark de Vries scored an injury time winner for Leicester City as they came from 2 goals down to defeat us in the FA Cup. Jermaine Genus had put us in front with a close-range finish before you scored a spectacular long-range goal. What are your memories of that goal, and were you disappointed that after scoring a goal of that nature, it didn't count for something more?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it was a great strike, but nothing more, really. It was a situation we let it slip away. We should never have lost that that match. And you know, like I said, it was a great strike. It was a memorable one, but at the same time, you'd taken away that goal and left with a victory at any time. So it was kind of one of those ones where it was short lived, just because the result was one that we should never have really lost. We should have moved on in that and made a real run. We had a good enough team to make a real run in that FA Cup, but it didn't work out for us on the day, so it was unfortunate, but bittersweet in one sense.
8th of April 2006, you and Michael Carrick struck either side of the interval to maintain Spurs' bid to qualify for the Champions League. You opened the scoring in the 44th minute after Man City keeper David James saved from Robbie Keane. What was your memories like from that game? Because I remember definitely in that period, Spurs, you know, we were relentless. We truly believed that we were going to get, you know, into the Champions League, that fourth spot. We had Edgar Davids in midfield. We really were, as a team and supporters, fully believing we were going to qualify for the Champions League. Was the spirit just so high at the time in the camp?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we were under that situation where we had that, you know, that fourth spot pretty much all season. We were, playing at a real high level. Results were going our way. We managed to, you know, that was a big game for us. We knew we needed to win that one as well to keep the momentum and keep our, you know, our bid for that fourth spot in our hands. And we were able to do that. And like I said, you know, that time is where, you know, decisions, you know, are made in leagues and things are, you know, March, April is a real important period in the leagues, and that was a period that we needed to win. We knew we needed to win that match, and that was a good one for us. We were able to do that, and we were able to continue to push on and keep that lead against arch rivals for as long as possible. But we all know, unfortunately, what happened after that.
Talking about our arch rivals, now you actually got to play in the last ever North London derby at Highbury. It was a game that was highly charged. Both clubs went into it. Tottenham sort of felt confident going into the game for the first time in a number of years going over to Highbury. And we took the lead via Robbie Keane's goal after an incident with Arsenal players sort of clattering into each other and Martin Jol issuing a play-on cry from the touchline. Thierry Henry equalised late on, and in my opinion, there was a foul in the lead-up to the goal by Emmanuel Adebayor. What are your memories of that day? Did the people at Tottenham sort of tell you how big the North London derby with Arsenal was and how much it meant to the fans? And what were your memories of the atmosphere of that day?
You know, I knew about the rivalry myself already. I mean, I know that it was the, you know, a massive one. Obviously, there was a big gap in the number of years leading up to that season between the two clubs. Arsenal had the upper hand for a number of years there against us. But going into that season, you know, as the season continues to go on, we start to gain that confidence. And we're going into that final game at Highbury, the final, you know, I think it was the second last game at Highbury, but the final North London game there, like you said. But it was, you know, we were high on confidence. We were in a situation where we knew we could get a result. We were up in the game. And then, yeah, Thierry Henry, he comes on literally probably in his first touch. He puts a real Thierry Henry foul, you know, a great little goal that he just takes on one little touch and just kind of flicks with the outside of his boot, if I remember right. Past the keeper, but if I'm being biased, there was, you know, I'd have to say there was definitely a foul. I was livid after that because I think it was there was no doubt it was in my mind clear foul, in the dressing room's mind after the game we all knew it was a clear foul. But you know, sometimes you just don't get those calls and things don't go your way. But had we got that call, who knows how the rest of the season would have played out? I think we probably would have got ourselves. And we got the draw in that game. I'm no doubt in my mind we would have finished fourth in that season.
Paul, we have to ask you about that game, that Lasagna Gate game, because we've had, you know, over this last month or two, a lot of ex-Spurs players on during that period actually playing that game, didn't feature. But, you know, you were heavily involved in that campaign. Despite Arsenal winning their two games in hand, Spurs only had to match their result in the final game of the season in order to secure that fourth spot. Now, we know what happened. We missed out on the final day against West Ham. I mean, tell us, because you wasn't playing that game, Paul, what was the emotion surrounding that game and the build-up to it? And obviously, it's now famously, you know, dubbed Lasagna Gate. What was that like, Paul, that game and the build-up to it?
You know, it was unfortunate. We had a number of players injured. Lely was injured. I had done my knee ligaments. I was injured. Jermaine Genus, if I'm not mistaken, was injured as well. There was a number of us who had played a lot of the season were injured going into that game, and we weren't fit, but we were headed to the stadium anyways. But to watch the game, we were all heading there together. But there was a big pressure. There was an enormous amount of pressure to finish fourth. It was probably more pressure because it was Arsenal chasing us down. We had a lead. We had that fourth spot for pretty much the entire season. Probably something we weren't used to as a club, as players, as a team. We weren't used to being maybe that high in the standings for a long, long time. So maybe a little inexperience led into the way there. But at the end of the day, it was tough just because we really weren't at full strength. Everyone knew that. It was a situation where we got into that game against West Ham, who really were highly, highly motivated to see us probably not finish fourth at the time. So they don't think they had much to play for in the game, but they were really highly motivated to win the match. And and we were depleted. The lads who had played were able to get onto the pitch. You know, some of them were sick in the dressing room right before kickoff. Some were sick a couple hours before kickoff, after kickoff, halftime. It was just it was one of those situations where nothing, it just didn't go right. We didn't have the legs, we didn't have the players, we didn't have the horses to run the race on that day. And it was real, real unfortunate because it was, you know, a build-up of 37 games where we were playing some real high-level football and some football where we probably deserved to finish in that fourth spot. And real bitter to come to the end there and see it end in a way where we really weren't at full strength, as opposed to maybe losing when you've got your full team out there, or even close to your full team out there.
That summer, Tottenham announced the signing of Pascal Chimbonda. did you have a heads up from Martin that he was going to be going out and signing another right back? And did he give you sort of any assurances over your role in the team and your position at the club moving forward?
No, there wasn't that situation where, other than myself knowing and the rest of the club squad knowing that we were playing in Europe. We knew that, like any big squad, they needed they wanted two players in every position as well. So that, you know that as well. So, they did bring in another player. But Martin, we talked about things and I knew that, my time maybe would come where we'd be playing games. It wasn't a situation where I'd be completely out. There'd be games that I would be playing, but it was obviously not the best situation knowing that they'd signed another player that, probably was given the nod to start in especially the beginning of the season over yourself. But, it's something as a pro you've got to be able to deal with. You've got to be able to manage those competitions inside of the squad as well. But it was nothing different than I was used to probably in Bremen when I was there. I just reminded myself of those situations there where at times in your early on in your career where you always had to prove yourself. You weren't necessarily always first choice. You always had competition. You always had to be better than the player beside you to get selected. So it was one of those situations where you just got to be mentally strong again and welcome to competition. Pascal's a great guy. I like him a lot. We had some, he's a real funny guy, enjoyable. Saw him again last year at the stadium when we played in the game against Inter in front of, in the opening of the new Spurs stadium. So it was great to see him. And he's, like anything, all the teammates are all end up good guys, even though you're kind of your competition and you're the guy that's playing in front of you or you're playing in front of at the time.
Tell most fans, Paul, it was over 10 years ago, and they probably can't quite believe it. That, in fact, even the hero of that night responded by saying you well, really well. It's a night that Spurs fans, certainly those present, will never forget. That night at Upton Park in March 2007, that night we come from 2-0 down to level at 2-2, only to go behind again 5 minutes from time. The night where Dimitar Berbatov curled home an exquisite free kick to level again at 3-3. And then on the 89th minute, that's the night where you found yourself with an open goal to pop home the winner in injury time. I mean, talk us through that game against West Ham and what it was like to play in, what it was like to score, and the scenes, Paul, with those away fans. It must still be, an incredible game to even reflect upon, even for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I get, usually reminded about once a year on it when that fixture kind of rolls around. I guess it was a little bit extra special. Because of the result the year before that, where we just spoke about, where we just came up short on our goal of finishing fourth, but it was a game of back and forth. It's typical, one of those games that you love to play in. It was probably voted best game of the year for rightful reason, and fortunately for us, we were able to swing the tie in our favor. Like you said, back and forth, you didn't know when it was going to stop. You just, fortunately for us and fortunately for myself, after that winner, you kind of knew it was done then, there and then. And it was one of those situations where thank God it wasn't a minute or two left on the time, because who knows what could have happened after that. But it was it's extra special to not only get the winner, but the winner really literally at the last kick of the game. And right in front of the fans, to be able to celebrate that was something extra special as well.
In October 2007, Tottenham actually sacked Martin Jol on a very strange evening where we were playing Getafe in the UEFA Cup at White Hart Lane. And he was on the bench that evening as news filtered through to supporters at halftime of Martin's sacking. Can you remember that night at all and what sort of the feeling was like for players before and after the game?
The players aren't daft. The manager isn't daft. He kind of knows what the situation was. We were under pressure. We obviously started the league, the campaign out very, very poorly. We were struggling, finding our feet, getting some results. We were in Europe where we had to get results as well. And it was a strange game because news kind of got filtered through. To the players on the bench in the second half a little bit, if I can remember. And then we kind of, once the whistle went, we could, sense that something was wrong in the stands, something was wrong in the atmosphere of the stadium. And we kind of knew, after that result, and then getting back into the dressing room. We knew then, there and then, that something had changed, and Martin was released. So it was, very, like I said, something I'd never had before, never experienced before in my time, and something not special, because it's something you're not proud of, because obviously us as a team, us as players, we kind of let the manager down. We, you know, the results are, you know, unfortunately they are the responsibility of the manager in the end, but, you know, the players are the ones playing, the players are the ones kicking the ball, so the players ultimately got to take that responsibility as well. And we struggled, and we weren't, he ended up having to take the responsibility of that. But like I said, the players, they held their part in that as well.
Now, we saw in come Wande Remmers as his replacement. I mean, we have to ask you, Paul, what was your first reaction to the appointment of Wande Remmers? Because this is a very experienced coach that won back-to-back UEFA Cups at the time before joining Spurs. I mean, what was that felt like for you, having the opportunity to play under him, or maybe not so much play under him, and reaction of him coming to the club?
We'd known Sevilla quite well because we'd played them in the UEFA Cup year prior to when they had won it as well. We had a real close, if you guys remember, we had a real close game tie against them. We, you know, could have went either way. We came up just short on beating them as well. That season, I think it was in the quarterfinal there where the fixture list just got real built up on us, and we lost that quarterfinal. We lost the quarterfinal against Chelsea as well in the FA Cup. So it was that period of time there it was tough on us, but it was a battle. So we'd known them quite well. Obviously, managers come in; they've got different opinions, different ways of playing. They've got opinions on players. We had a different sport director at the time as well, who hadn't signed me, so he had maybe a different opinion on myself as well as a player. And that's just football. You understand it when you get older. It's frustrating when you're a player. Don't understand it as much, but when you're older and you're into managing, you're into coaching, you understand, you know, player coaches just got different opinions, and there was nothing different than there. It was just a matter of Wande having a different opinion on myself and maybe a number of other players, and that was it. It was nothing personal. It was just something that the way he went about it, the way he chose to pick his players. And like I said, any manager has every right to pick the players he wants and pick the players he wants to play with.
Obviously, your time getting into the team then lapsed a little, and you actually joined Fulham on loan for the second half of the 2007-08 season, where you played a part as Roy Hodgson turned the team around from Premier League strugglers into a really decent footballing side. What did you make of your experience under Wande as a whole then? And were you disappointed not to be able to give a sort of opportunity to break back into the Spurs first team?
Yeah, it was strange actually, because the loan agreement with Fulham kind of came about when I was had a little bit of a run of games under Wande. It was probably a few games there where I was starting. You know, he'd give me a chance to actually play and prove myself. But you know, you got that. You just sensed that that feeling that you weren't going to be his first choice, and Fulham came along with an offer to, you know, continue playing in the Premiership and help them in their battle to save himself. And it was you know, Roy Hodgson, who was, you know, really experienced manager at the time. It was a great situation. It fit well for me, as well as a big challenge, something I was never used to playing in that situation with a team fighting for relegation. As well, so it was, you know, it was frustrating at the time to leave Tottenham and not be really have that real opportunity or chance to prove myself under the new manager. But it was, again, it was an opportunity to play football, see out the season. I played every game that I was at the club at the time with Fulham, so it was a good chance to get myself going again and playing regularly. So something I didn't really want to turn down.
Now, your contract, Paul, was terminated by Spurs by mutual consent on December the 21st, 2008. Did you always feel for you, Paul, that was always going to be the case, or would you have liked to remain at Spurs and be given more of an opportunity to really push on at the club?
Yeah, to be honest, I think after the loan at Fulham, it was going to be a situation where returning to the club, you know, there might have been probably a slimmer chance than if I was a betting man, but you know, and there was some opportunity there maybe even to join Fulham after that season. That didn't work out. So there was a few other opportunities throughout that summer that didn't work out, a few opportunities in Germany that didn't work out. But I think towards the end of the, the end of that Christmas break, knowing that there was some opportunity maybe in early January, if things worked out in Germany where they were on their break, there was an opportunity maybe there. So we'd come to an agreement. It was unfortunate, to be honest, because Harry had just taken over. And at that time, we had some good conversations. Harry really liked me. And he gave me every indication, that I would have a chance, have an opportunity. But it might have been just at the wrong time, the wrong moment at the wrong time. And there was another opportunity that come up or was, potentially coming up. So we had agreed to kind of part ways. But it was a little bit unfortunate because it would have been a real pleasure to work under Harry at the club. In that short time that he'd taken over, some real good memories of him. He was someone who brought me back into the squad, into the team, and welcomed me, liked me as a player, like I said. But it was just probably a little bit too late at that time to continue my career there.
After leaving Spurs, you returned to the Bundesliga, having been signed immediately by Borussia Mönchengladbach, where you joined fellow international Rob Friend. Did you have any other interest at the time, or was that your preference to return back to Germany?
Yeah, I think there was an opportunity. There was a couple of opportunities there. Once a contract got ended at Tottenham, there was one or two other places, other clubs in other countries that were kind of inquiries. But, when you start getting older, you have to focus your time on something that you know. I think German football I knew really well. That opportunity came about, and it was a very similar situation that I found myself in at Fulham, where Gladbach were really struggling at the bottom of the table. After the winter break, they needed a big second half of the season, and they'd signed some experienced players. They brought some experienced players in and given it a real go. And I was it was a good opportunity for me to get back playing, get back to a league that I knew quite well, in a nice area of Germany as well. So it was that kind of situation where that was probably the best fit at the time for me. So that was the decision that I made, and it was at that time the right decision. We were successful. We managed to stay up, and if you see the club, it's under the same sport director who signed me is still there, and they're doing a real fantastic job. And the club has taken off. It's a huge club. Mönchengladbach is a massive club. They get supported. 50,000-60,000 people a game are coming to the stadium week in and week out there. So it's a huge traditional football club in Germany.
Paul, you announced your retirement as a player at the age of 35. You now currently serving as assistant coach for a Canadian Premier League side, York 9. Tell us about your new experience, and do you also have aspirations one day, Paul, of going on to be a manager?
Once I finished my career, I came back to Toronto and started actually working with the Federation, the Canadian Federation. In the youth teams, I started with the 15s and the 17s, had some experience with the U20s, and even into the senior team where I was assistant coach of the senior team as well. So I was able to, in 5 or 6 years, kind of go through every level of coaching at that time. I was the head coach of the U17 team as well for a couple of years. So it was a great experience. And then I stopped working with the Federation there. I took a step back. York 9 is basically managed by a good buddy of mine, Jimmy Brennan, who I played with for a number of seasons in with the national team. Grew up actually playing with him in the local football leagues here in Canada. So I've known him for a number of years and years and years. And York 9 is real close to my home here. Didn't have to move. It's kind of a no-brainer in my situation to say, the opportunity wasn't there in the first season because of just where I was with my career and still kind of just finishing off of the national programs and stuff like that. So this opportunity came about. You don't have to move. I didn't have to move my house. I didn't have to move my family. Like I said, the club is 10 minutes from my place. So it's a great opportunity to work with a good friend of mine again. And get back into the professional environment and start again in playing in a managing coaching in a club that's in full time professionals. That's something down the road that definitely of interest in for me. But, you know, we'll have to see. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying what we're doing. We just started preseason here until we came out with the we were forced into this break. But hopefully we can get ourselves going again, because I was, you know, starting to really enjoy my time being back on the pitch every day.
Absolutely delighted to see you return to the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium opening in the Spurs Legends match against Inter Milan, as you touched on earlier. What was it like playing in that new stadium, and what did it feel like to you seeing Tottenham as a club come so far and to have moved into this, you know, super stadium?
The stadium is fantastic. It is, you know, like most fans who've been there, they probably, you know, they've seen it themselves. It's absolutely perfect. I mean, there isn't, there's nothing you can say about it that they've missed. They've ticked every box. I think, you know, that it was a great experience to be able to be one of the first players or former players to be able to play in there. It was a great environment, great atmosphere there. We, you know, 50,000 people watching a bunch of old guys run around, which was something special to have again, and to see a lot of your former teammates out there was real fun, real good experience. And to see the club as to where they are now, you know, just losing out in the Champions League last season, I still kind of remind the fans of where this, you know, where the club has come in the last 10-15 years. You know, it's you measure success based on, you know, a lot of people measure success based on trophies and based on silverware, but if you look at the success of the club, you know, it's almost year in and year out playing in the Champions League, advancing into the Champions League, even, you know, like you said, getting to the final of the Champions League, playing at the top of the table, second, third place finishing. That's something probably before I got to Tottenham 15-odd years ago. That's something that was, you know, not even in the back of anybody's mind. It was the ambition of just being in the top half of the table. If, you know, that's 10-15 years ago. That isn't that long ago. And now it's a club that's just, like you said, taken off. It's established itself as in the top 4 or 5 of English football, without a doubt. And the sky's definitely the limit there. It's you know, it's great to see, as a former player, where this club has been, where this club has gone.
Now, Paul, obviously, since you played in that stadium, we have had a managerial change, and we always ask ex-players that we've had on what they've made of that change of manager. We saw, obviously, a very popular man in Maurizio Pochettino leave the club. In has come Jose Mourinho, obviously a man that is a serial winner, who he says determined to bring trophies to Tottenham. We have to ask you, just on your opinion, what did you make of Spurs parting ways with Maurizio Pochettino and the appointment of Jose Mourinho? And do you believe he will prove to be a success at Tottenham and deliver those trophies that Spurs fans are craving?
I think it was a situation where after the hype, getting to the Champions League final last year and you know, really playing some high level football, I think that's probably the best Tottenham team you've seen, even though there's been some great ones in the last few years, that team was at its real high. You know, it was fantastic, but it was kind of unfortunate the way the season started, the number of players, maybe contracts running out, going into their final year. That took over a lot of the discussion in the press and in the media. The discussion after the game, whether Pochettino was even going to come back for that season as well, was always there. So it was kind of strange, because it wasn't, they didn't really take that momentum from the final and take that momentum from last season and come again into this season. It was kind of like, almost kind of like hitting a wall and kind of taking a step back. And I think that's what kind of happened. And, you know, you never like to see a manager get changed. And unfortunately, I guess the club felt that they had to make that change as well. But, you know, when you're not on the inside and you don't know the actual discussions being placed, it's hard to judge. But they made that decision, you know, thinking that that's what needed to be done. And obviously, I don't need to sit here and tell you Jose's what he's done, what accomplishments he's had in his career. His resume speaks for itself, and I know that he's going to be determined to be successful. I know he's going to be determined to prove a lot of doubters wrong. I know he's going to be determined to say that he's still going to be a winner, that he's still a winner. And prove to everybody that he can bring something to the club. And I'm sure that he's working and he'll work every day to do that. Again, you probably couldn't have come up with a better name at that time who was available and who was ready and who has had that success that he's had, you probably wouldn't have been able to find one. And you still probably couldn't find one that's been able to and had the success that Jose's had in his career.
What, when you were at Tottenham, who did it feel like in the dressing room were the real leaders amongst the squad? Who sort of pulled us together when things weren't going so well and said, you know, come on, guys, let's sort this out?
Yeah, well, you know, you always look to, you know, your captains are always the first line in that, you know, taking that responsibility on. I know that in captaining the national team is the exact same thing. But, you know, Ledley King was a big factor in the dressing room. Robbie Keane was a big factor in the dressing room. Those kind of guys, you know, they kind of led the group in one sense. You know, even in the first season that I was there, bringing in a guy like Edgar Davids had, you know, that experience alone. He was a big factor in the dressing room too. But I'd say over the time, no doubt it was Ledley. Robbie as well, but I'd say those two probably in the time I was there had a big say and took the big responsibility. And they were really the two captains of the club, you know, Robbie being the assistant captain and Ledley being the captain of the club.
The final question we have to ask you, who was the best ever player that you played with at Tottenham?
Ledley King. And I say that strictly on the basis of there, you know, there's the names are unbelievable. If you really think about how fortunate I've been in my career to play alongside some of the names that played for the club and played alongside me was, you know, there's some unbelievably talented players, some fantastic players, some real world-class players, names that are still playing until today. But I say Ledley just because he played alongside me at the back and, he's just he was an absolute machine, an absolute beast. You knew when you were playing beside a guy like that, even though if a little slip up here or there, he was ready. He was always there to help you out. He was just a player that, like you said, like everyone knows, could hardly train because of his knee. But you see what he was able to do every weekend and bring that kind of level. Where I consider him not just probably the best player I've played with at the back, but probably at my time, I have no doubt saying he was one of the best, if not the best defender in all of English football. That's how high I kind of regard the Ledley.
And I think, to be honest with you, Paul, we would agree. I mean, Ledley was, I mean, such a fabulous player, and it's just crazy when you think that a guy could really just come out of nowhere and play football in the space of, you know, not training all week, and some of the performances he put in were just absolutely memorable. And I'm sure, like I say, you know, John, you probably feel the same about Ledley, just what a career he had and God, what he could have achieved if he hadn't have been injured for a lot of the time.
An absolute legend, and anyone associated with Tottenham Hotspur remembers Ledley so fondly. So yeah, it was a real pleasure to see him play over a number of years, and we always will wonder what could have been with Ledley. But hearing from Paul saying that he was, you know, could have been or was the best defender in England at the time is something we would agree with, having been him week in, week out. And it's also great to hear that from pros who've played alongside him.
Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on to reflect on some old times at Tottenham. So thank you ever so much for coming on, and we wish you all the very best, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was a pleasure. It was fun. It was any time. It was a great opportunity to talk and think about the old times, and also like you said, hopefully we can start talking about the recent football games or the next games coming up, as opposed to speaking too much about the past. You know, hopefully we can get ourselves going again.
Agree. Well, listen, Paul, been an absolute pleasure. Thank you ever so much again for coming on to The Last Word on Spurs. And like I say, we wish you all the very best.
Here's Key. Another promising opportunity. A stunning goal from Paul Stoutelli. His first in English football, and it's given Tottenham a very comfortable lead going into half-time. Zamora's lost out here. Referee looks at his watch as he races forward. It's Jermaine Defoe, and he's got Lennon up with him, and only Konchesky to beat at the moment. Unbelievably, it has been pushed out to Stoutelli, and with seconds
towards Lennon. Thatcher beats him in the air, but it falls to Mido here, who took it well on his chest. Keane, Robbie Keane. Oh, and again, James is denied. But Stalteri coming forward from the back gives Spurs the lead 2 minutes before half-time. The goal from an improbable source after David James had made that great save from Keane.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.